Welcome to A Moment for Moms, your guide to raising mentally and financially fit professional athletes with Wendy Sparks and Daniel LaForce. This is the podcast where we celebrate the unsung heroes of sports, the moms. We will speak to the moms of basketball players that you all love and dive deep into what it really takes to raise pro basketball players while equipping moms with the tools, insights, and support they need for the journey.
Today, we have a great episode, and we are joined by Max and Hannes Grasher from UBS International in New York City.
This episode is very, very important to us because financial literacy is an area that us moms and most people don't know much about. So our guests today are really going to enlighten us on specific areas where we, as the moms of professional athletes, can really help our sons be dynamic in this realm.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
Great.
It's such a blessing for us, as Dania said, because a lot of our families don't understand the fundamentals of financial advisory, I guess, or financial wealth. And so for us to have you here with us just to teach our listeners is really important to us. So what are some of the biggest mistakes athletes make when first earning wealth?
Yeah, so I mean, there are several different ways that we can go, and we've all heard the horror stories before, right?
Yes.
One thing that I always try to instill into our clients and anyone we're just educating when they come into sudden wealth, money, the sum of money that they've never seen before in their lives. One thing we always say is to avoid the PEPs, P-E-P. So there's certain people that you just want to keep out of your circle because they're really just there for themselves. With the PEPs, the first P is the predator. So the predator, they're a master at inserting them in the athlete or the celebrity's circle. They're master manipulators, and they do whatever they can to essentially get a piece of the action when really they're not bringing anything else to the table besides that. We have the exploiters. So in the industry, you can find a lot of very smart, qualified individuals, whether, you know, they're financial advisors, they're accountants, they're attorneys. But they generally, as exploiters, they'll utilize different techniques that border on the line of legality, so they can make a quick buck. They know what they're doing, but again, not looking out for the best interest of the athlete. And then we have the pretender, where they mean well. They do really want the best for the professional athlete, but they just don't have the knowledge or expertise or the background to deliver on that promise. So it ends up harming the athlete down the road.
Yeah.
So we always, that's an acronym that I always like to explain to people when we're talking about what to avoid. Another big thing I think that a lot of athletes have experienced is what we call keeping up with the Joneses, right? So, you know, you're a rookie, whether it's basketball, football, whatever professional sport you're playing, you walk into a locker room, you see the more veteran players or the guys who are the stars on the team just signed a big contract. You know, they have their jewelry, they have, you know, their fancy cars, whatever it may be. And the young players suddenly feel like they have to do something to get up to that level.
Yeah.
And instead of making sound decisions where, you know, they're not on their big contract, they're not at that level of wealth yet. They need to be smarter and more strategic about what they're doing with their money. It's still a lot of money, but it's not the type of money that the star player on the team, the veterans, have already made throughout their careers. Do not just make purchases because you want to stay on the same level or look like, you know, you're living large like those guys. So I think bottom line, the message is don't don't overextend yourself and be wary of the people you trust. You know, it's hard in this business. People come out of the woodwork. It's really hard to find people that actually care about your life and achieving your goals and your well-being. Make sure that, you know, you have the right people around you.
Now, for us, you know, as moms, our professional athletes are first generation high net worth individuals. So when you talk about the PEPs, for us, we don't know what red flags to recognize because we've never been in that space. So what kind of red flags would you really have moms look for when we're entering this opportunity with our sons, whether it's, you know, when we're interviewing different financial advisors or agents, or, you know, what should we be really looking out for and listening to help them make the best decision?
Yeah, I mean, so when you're interviewing or you're, you know, vetting people to be part of the athlete circle, right? I mean, generally we say a really good team is made up of, you know, from a financial perspective, we say, you know, obviously the wealth manager, financial advisor, the CPA, so accountant, the criminal attorney, insurance agent, risk agent, trust and estate attorney. When you're vetting these people, they should have no problem when you're going to them saying, you know, they're not, obviously if they respect confidentiality, they're not going to name names, but they should say, if you're okay, check out XYZ. And they should be okay with you exploring other options as well. So they shouldn't be presenting themselves as the only one that's the option. Because people, when they do that, that's because they feel threatened, because they know they're not the best of the best. So if you're not, you know, vetting multiple people and the advisors are telling you to, you know, right away go with them, that's a red flag right there. You know, do your due diligence. When, you know, for financial advisors or wealth managers, you know, we're required to be registered with FINRA. Among other certifications we have, you can go on FINRA's website, the financial regulators. You can look both of our names up, and it comes up with our registration ID. And it shows, you know, any
complaints,
disclosures that we may have. Really easy. Anyone can go online and do that. For CPAs and attorneys, they have similar processes. The attorney, depending on the state that they're practicing in, you just go to the bar. Make sure that they're actually allowed to practice what they're selling to you.
And in the state where you are, right?
I mean, all too often we, you know, you hear horror stories of professional athletes that, you know, they got introduced to someone, didn't do their homework, and several months down the road, find out they're not even a registered advisor or wealth manager. So simple things like that. And, you know, I'm also always been a big fan of going to team websites, looking at what's out there. Of course, that shouldn't be your ultimate deciding factor when you're trying to make a decision like that. But there should be some kind of track record there. You can see what they've done. They'll have certain educational posts on their website, how they function, the background of the team, simple things like that. It's easy to do. And then, of course, the deeper you want to get into it, you can get as deep as you want. But those are kind of some of the points that I'd start at.
And I think you can certainly ask for references, even though there's, you know, privacy. But we sometimes have clients that reach out to us and say, hey, can you give me a reference, somebody you've worked with? And if they give you the okay, we can essentially give them the name of a number of clients that we've worked with. Then they can actually talk to the client saying, what, you know, what's your experience been, and et cetera. So I think that's, if you don't have an open book and you can tell a prospect, you know, you can check with that person, check with the regulators, check with existing clients. I think somebody who's trying to guard that information says, oh, I can't really share that. It's, you know, for privacy reasons. That too is a red flag.
So Hannes, earlier before, Max was saying, you know, you have the players that are in the locker rooms, the rookies to say, and they are trying to keep up with the Joneses is the term we use, which is actually on the money because you have these kids that want to fit in and they want to be just like their counterparts. So with that said, can you tell us how crucial it is for athletes to establish really good financial habits early on in their careers?
Well, I think, and certainly what we've seen with really anybody who came from a background where really the only financial literacy that they were familiar with is like making it from paycheck to paycheck, right? How do I stretch the dollar? Or even the moms, right, who are sometimes working three jobs to make sure the kids have the right uniforms, the basketball shoes and all that, sending them to the school. You know, that's been their experience. So what we have to do, really, I think that's our obligation, is to make sure we educate the players, the parents. And we can't just assume that they know the acronyms that we know, that they know what a stock, a bond, an insurance policy is. It's like, and you know, I mean, we've had, you know, we've kind of learned over the years, right? So you want to make sure that they're exposed to all these different things. When you're talking to them about buying a house and getting a mortgage, you know, explain to them why it's beneficial to have a mortgage rather than taking the cash that you just got and buying a house for your mom and for your dad and for your cousins, right? If you get a mortgage, there are tax deductions. Like, there are some things that if you've never owned a real estate property, you just don't know it. So you can't just say, do this, do that. Really go into the nuts and bolts and explain to them, this is why we're doing it versus, you know, doing it this way. That's why we think it makes sense. And then, and basically really make sure they understand the process. Same thing with, you know, once you have a financial advisor, we have meetings, review meetings with our clients monthly or on a quarterly basis, and they can look at the statement, at the asset allocation. What does that really mean, right? Why am I buying stocks versus bonds, right? These are the type of things that I think we assume people know, but they don't. So we really have to take the time and make sure they understand. I mean, we see it sometimes with clients who get divorced, where the husband made most of the financial decisions, right, all their lives. And all of a sudden, the women don't really know how much money do we have, how long is it going to last. They just weren't familiar with it. So we really try to sit down and explain it to them. And we model it, and we said, this is how much your money is going to last if you spend X amount of money a month. You know, for athletes to understand that early on, to have an app on their phone that's a budget app where they are saying, okay, this is how much money is coming in every month, and this is how much money is going out, right? And you're really checking it. That detail, that scrutiny to, you know, detail, I think is really important if you establish that early. And again, it's about educating and not just talking about, you know, financial topics that are complicated, but you really got to get into the weeds and almost force them to say, you got to, this is not, you know, I know this is not your deal and you want to go, you got to go practice and this and that, but this is going to be crucial for you. If you want to create generational wealth and you can do it, this is your, you know, you're absolutely in a position to do it. Here are some of the steps that you want to take. So,
budgeting pretty much.
Yeah, budgeting, right, exactly. And just taking the time to understanding some of the simple things that they've never experienced before that can change your lives, right? So,
and, you know, you talk about education and educating, you know, players and families, but, you know, to play a little devil's advocate, I think professionals have to understand what these families are being exposed to. You talk about 18-year-olds who are now making millions of dollars and now have to perform at a level to be accountable for that money. They're worried about play. They're worried about basketball. You know, they're not worried about how to make this money last in terms of my legacy or wealth, generational wealth. They're worried about the here and now. And I think, like you said, players and parents have to understand that along with the play, you also have to worry about how we're going to make this last. How we're going to make it, you know, you go past one generation just in case you get injured, just in case your contract ends. You just never know when the ball's going to stop bouncing. And we have to, I think professionals have to understand that in educating, you have to make it important part of that. This is an important part of the process, you know? And, you know, I know for me, having a son that's invested in his own financial profile is huge because he's making great decisions. And me as a mom also supporting it, but also sitting there listening and learning and not being afraid to go back to school. I'm not going to get an MBA, trust me, but I'm going to know the lingo that's being discussed in the conference rooms when my son is in there and they're looking at him. But you're going to look at me too. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, there has to be a give and take. I think professionals need to come down and meet the families, and the families also have to be responsible and step up to the plate and say, okay, what exactly does this entail? It wasn't just about your son's being named, being drafted and walking across that stage. It's a whole lot more that comes with it. So I think there has to be some sort of, you know.
And I think that also that just goes back to making sure you surround yourself with the right professionals. Like any relationship,
right,
at least in our business, you know when you connect with someone right away. I mean, for us, we know that we're going to be able to help our clients best when we fully understand their situation, what their goals are, what they're looking to achieve, whether it's on the court and past that, whether it's legacy, what's the next chapter of their life, what are they going to be doing at the next point of their career. Having the right advisors around you, regardless of, you know, their category of expertise is, you don't just want people that are going to be saying, hey, I have, you know, XYZ problem. They're like, just leave it to me. I'll fix it. Don't worry about it. Because then they're doing whatever on your behalf, but you don't actually understand why they did it. And
it may not be what you want to do.
Yeah.
They just think that's what the best solution is, but you don't understand it. But I think to your question, again, I think that's why it's so important to get the moms. And I think really the moms play, in a lot of cases, play a bigger role because they're with their kids all the time. I think that's why it's important to get the moms involved in, you know, what we're talking about, getting, you know, the families educated.
Yeah.
Because they talk to their kids a lot more. And we may have a monthly call or a quarterly meeting. You talk to them all the time, right? You talk, some of them, you talk to them every day. And if something comes up, they're going to listen to you, right? And so the combination of having a vetted team of trusted advisors around you who are involved with the parents, the moms, and the players, that's all part of the team, right? Because you're going to be able to talk to your son on a more frequent basis, and you can kind of like egg him on a little bit. Come on, this is, you know, Terrence, this is really important. I know you don't have time for it, super busy.
Right.
Just take the time. I think it's going to benefit you in the long run, right? So I think that's where, and I think you're totally right. You're never done learning.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I still take educational classes and stuff.
Right.
Like, to your point, you're not going to go back to school for an MBA, but you can certainly, and we do financial literacy courses, right? We did it at the NBA Summer League, and, you know, there are things that it's not brain surgery.
Right.
There's some very simple concepts in finance that we can easily convey. But in terms of talking to these young kids who, like you said, live here now, I mean, we have so many examples of UBS clients who are athletes and entertainers who have been on podcasts, who have been publicly, you know, have talked about the mistakes they make.
Yeah.
So if you're an NFL rookie and you hear from actually the head of our athletes entertainment segment, you know, Wale, who played, Omalea, who played in the NFL for 11 years, he talks about the mistakes that he made.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, when you have some people that have been there, that have made the mistakes and have recovered, or in some cases not recovered, I think that is a lot more has a lot more impact
for sure
on the place, because we can tell them, listen, we can figure out a way for you to take 10% of your salary and put it in some kind of, whether it's a trust or foundation, right, where you can achieve all the things you want to achieve. But from a tax perspective, it's much smarter.
Right.
From a governance perspective, it's a lot smarter. And you will never notice it in your lifestyle. It's not going to change your lifestyle. But if you're done playing after 5 years or 10 years, you may have $20 million, you know, account somewhere that can benefit your kids, your kids' kids, your family, and your community.
Right.
So I think helping them to avoid these big errors early on can go a long way, right? So I think that's sort of, that's what I would say.
I think an issue is a lot of parents don't know where to go, right? So for us, we're saying it's easy because we've experienced it. But we have a lot of parents that are in our situation where it is very tough, because this is the first time that money has actually come into their families. Like Danny was saying before, they're first generational wealthy, right? So for them, you get that first paycheck. That's everything. They don't want to invest because they're afraid to invest because they don't understand investment, right? So for them, it's like, oh, this is my money. I'm going to keep it here. And we'll wait a couple of years before we get a financial advisor, because from conversations that I've had with some moms, they feel that it's like kind of imposing. And just because they weren't educated.
I just made this money. You want to take it from me now?
Right.
I just got this.
Exactly.
So first like, I've ever had money in my life. Yeah. Right.
And sometimes we see the dreams, right? Finally, we can get a house. We're out of this one bedroom apartment with, you know what I mean? Finally, I can get this car. Finally, I don't want somebody to come in and tell me that I can't have this. And that's very, very common. So this is why we like to do these kind of episodes, because it's to, first of all, it's transparency. Two, it's organic. And then they're saying, okay, well, hold on. We have two people here that we know, we trust. They're doing something about it. Maybe we can look into it. It's kind of like testimony.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why we appreciate this, because one financial mistake can really
and sink you, right, and change your life.
Right.
And so we would, for example, would say, okay, you want that car? Don't spend $250,000 and put down cash. You know, lease it for 3 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's not going to kill you. Buy a house, get a mortgage, right? There's tax advantages.
Right.
You want to give money to someone, set up a structure where you can do it in a tax-efficient way.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not saying you can't do this, but hey, here's a smart way of doing it, or better way of doing it, right? So you kind of like, you ring fence, you protect your assets, you protect yourself from the big mistakes.
Yeah.
I think that's where the team comes in, and where the moms can come in to listen, listen to this. You can still drive around the same car you wanted to drive, but it's only going to cost you $1,000 a month versus putting down $250,000 or $200,000, and you can invest that money and make 7% on it.
Exactly.
And with that, the gains on that investment, you're actually paying for the lease.
Right.
Right. So in a way, you just let your money work for you and never touched it. I think that's where, and obviously I think to have a resource, I mean, we've talked about this before, you get calls from moms all the time and say, you know, Dania or Wendy, I've got this issue. What do I do? Right.
Yeah.
And because you have such a great network of experts, you can just say, hey, call so-and-so. Here's a number, you need a prenup, call so-and-so. You're buying a big house, you need it insured, call so-and-so.
Well, we're blessed to have these networks. You know what I mean? For me, my network started in Canada and then trickled down here, in the U.S., but I had to learn everything. But I also had the desire to learn. Not everybody has that desire. And it could be just because I'm a little afraid I might ask silly questions or it might not be pertinent to my son. I don't know. Let me just stay away. Not realizing that, no, moms, we need you. Your kids need you. You know what I mean? Don't push yourselves out of that gap, because that
gap. Don't allow others to push you out.
Well,
fix your ego, because they think you don't know.
Yeah.
And you're not educated enough. And you're not going to be able to help your son make the right decisions because you're just unaware.
Yeah.
And I think the more we show them that we are aware, and we are their first line of defense, you need to make sure we understand
yes.
before you go to them.
Yeah.
You know? And Terrence said something that was very important to me one time. And I think a lot of the guys in the NBA think this. They got to understand they're rich. They're not wealthy.
Yes.
You know, yes, you're rich, but how can you turn that into wealth, generational wealth?
Yes.
And I think players like Michael Jordan, like Magic Johnson, like even LeBron and Shaq, those guys are wealthy because of they were rich at one point yes. in their career. So that's not a lot. That I just named four out of hundreds of NBA players that could be in those positions had they been yeah. smarter about investing their money and getting them the proper advice, right? So I think, like you said, showing these guys, showing our athletes the good and the bad, who did it right, who did it wrong, you know, and how can you be on more the right side than the wrong side with it? But I just think it's very important for them to understand that this is a small part of their life if they want to have generational wealth to be able to support their kids and their grandkids and the generations after that. They have to be very smart about their money today.
And I think, you know, Terrence is sort of probably an exceptional case of for somebody so young to have, you know, with your help, to have created a foundation this early on in his career because he wants to give back to the community. That is, you know, that's a huge step. But that's not the norm,
right?
Right, and so he's certainly somebody who can influence some of his teammates, and you know, by showing this is how I'm giving back, and this is how much joy I'm getting out of it. This is really meaningful. Like this is much better than a piece of jewelry.
Yeah.
To see 20 kids attend my basketball clinic and get a scholarship, you know, through one of the foundations or one of the organizations, the Inspiring Young Minds that
yeah.
they support,
yeah.
right? I'm sending 20 kids to a private school and they're going to go to college. And right. some of them may get a scholarship, but mm-hmm. you know, they're going to get an education. I mean, how much joy does that bring you versus saying, oh, I just bought, you know, another Mercedes right. or, and I think again, it's examples. It's like, it's good role models. It's, you know, even thinking ahead, like look at a Michael Strahan, for example, right? I don't think he would have ever imagined that he would be the host of the Today Show
right.
or Regis, right? So
no, Good Morning America.
Good Morning America, right?
Yeah.
He's most likely making more money in endorsements and, you know, as a spokesperson, as a TV show host. The same with Tiki Barber, but I think, you know, they were New York Giants that we knew. And in the off season, he got a job as an intern learning the TV business, right? How to become a reporter. Now he's on, I'm not sure what channel he's on, but not quite to the level of a Michael Strahan. But certainly, you know, they've built a life well beyond their sports, which is, you know, almost dwarfs their really legendary careers. And I think that's when you're looking at these examples, right? Versus this is where you could be in 10 years or 15 years. Versus here, you know, do you want to go work at McDonald's or, you know, because you've wasted all your money?
Right. Yeah, but with that, a lot of athletes don't look past their career.
Right.
Right. You know what I mean? Once they get that one, that contract, they're there. They stay there, right?
But not so, yeah.
after saying 10, 15
right.
years down yeah. the road. They're thinking 10, 15 games down the road, right? Oh, my new
yeah.
my new this. Right. So they don't see, like, hold on a second, this is going to end soon.
And I think
that's where the moms come in.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, that's right. when mothers and other close relatives and family members, advisors, that's when you guys can step in.
Yeah.
We got to make sure that eventually over time, they are thinking that way.
Yes, yeah.
But you guys, like you said, you're the first line of defense.
100%.
So someone needs to be looking out for it. You know. And you actually care.
Yeah, and I'm not a big fan of the NIL process for college athletes, but at least now they're getting firsthand, you know, practice on how to make money and
right.
have it grow or be smart about my spending. So maybe that generation that's experienced in handling money and financial wealth earlier can be better professional athletes and have that money grow longer over a period of time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
prepare.
Think yeah. about it. Like in the case of NIL, I mean, if I'm a 16, 17-year-old kid getting handed $100,000.
Exactly.
I don't know what it means to, you know, I don't know then it's going to be taxed and
right.
what it's going to mean to be hit it.
Oh, yeah.
Ordinary income.
That's the other part of the learning process.
Right?
Going to be hit.
Or right. You taxes?
Either that. Either professional you, or jail.
Right,
you
yeah.
Taxes. Yeah.
You, either way.
You blow that money.
Take that car with you.
You blow that money. Uncle Sam comes and says, hey, you made this an income. You give
yours $40,000.
Yeah.
And you don't have it, then we're talking about a whole nother situation.
Right. Right. Park that car outside the jailhouse. Wait right there for you when you come out in 4 years, sir. So, yeah.
Very true.
Well, and this is where the education comes, right? And so we appreciate you so much for sharing these gems with us, because I personally wish that I would have had this years ago, because I didn't. And I didn't know where to go. I had no idea. So it wasn't only a factor of me being in Canada, but when my son got here in the U.S., I was like, who am I supposed to ask? I had no idea. So I put all the trust in one person. So normally we'll go to an agent and say, can you help?
Do you know someone?
Right. Right. But for me, I learned in my process was when I built a team with my son and for my son, I didn't want the agent to know who the financial advisor was and the real estate agent and all that. I don't want a team of buddies.
Right.
Right. Because it works to their advantage. So I wanted to flip it and say, you work for us and not us work for, you know what I mean? It's not the opposite. So we made sure that the real estate agent, he had no idea what country they are. He didn't know if we had, you know what I mean? A financial advisor. It was none of his business. And I think that separation is important. I really do.
It's important in some aspects, but at the same token, you need somebody needs to quarterback. So whether it's the mom, right? You need somebody who can quarterback all.
Who's going to bring the
because you don't want the silo. Right, right. Like this person, you know, you have
to communicate.
You get traded, and so now all of a sudden you have a house in California, and now you buy another condo in Indiana or whatever. And so you have a mortgage here, a mortgage there. You have insurance here, you have insurance there. You want somebody to understand the whole picture. Who could say, okay, now I'm renting the house in California because I moved. I'm not going to let a $4 million house sit empty, right?
Right. So let me be clear then from what I was saying. I wasn't saying, when I was saying I don't want the team to be brought to us, what I'm saying is we wanted to develop the team, but we're quarterbacking.
You and I pick it.
You pick your own.
And they're going to meet
right.
the people that right. we put together is right. what I was trying to say.
Not ask the agent, hey, do you have a trusted state attorney, a risk,
Careless.
And he's like, here, let's give you this bundle.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's like, you know what I mean? It's like cell phone and cable and
internet.
Right.
And I think it also...
I don't use a phone line, but hey, it's cheap, right?
But we'll give you one anyway.
I think it's also a testament to the professionalism and... how qualified the advisor is based on how well they can work with
exactly.
other professionals and yeah. the clients and the, their close-knit family.
Yeah.
If you have people who don't work well with others, another red flag.
Red flag.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. And I think it established some sort of professionalism and respect where the families come to play, meaning... the agents or the people that you choose in the team, they look at you differently versus them giving you everything. You're showing them, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm talking about. And I'm building this the way it fits our family. Right? You know what I mean? Because when we were interviewing agents, for example, I was saying to my son, it's important that he fits with you. When we interview financial advisors, it's important that they understand what your end goal is yeah. and what you're trying to do. Because we didn't want people just to say, oh, just don't worry about it. I'll let you know. We'll do quarterly meetings. Exactly. We'll tell you how rich you are or not in a couple of months. No. No, that's not how it's going to work. So this is why I'm saying for me it's important that we, from the onset, manage the situation as opposed to us being managed. Because we're saying so many times, we're being managed. We're being told, don't worry about it. We've had mothers that come to us and tell us, I have no idea what's going on in my sons or daughters, because we do WMBA as well, finances. No clue. Zero. And they're not included. And it's not like something, we'll just have a conversation with, no, I'm told that it's none of my business because my child is grown. No.
And again, that's making sure that it's a relationship.
Right.
Right? It's like...
That's the thing. We want to cultivate it.
You want to make sure that you're a good fit for each other. If you're not a good fit with an advisor or an attorney or an agent, whatever it may be, you know. Mm-hmm. You have that gut feeling. You know when you click with someone. It's just like when, I was what, 25 on the New York dating scene. You know who you mesh with right away on a first date and who you don't.
So let's not go off topic.
You know, for me, I have no problem telling people no, right? You know, yeah.
But it's true.
I think that's where asking questions is so important, yes. Right? Because I think we've seen it so much. You know, you give somebody access or responsibility for your wealth, right?
Yes.
Let's call it financial advisor, right? If you don't ask the question, you know, over time, if he or she thinks they can do whatever they want, right? And so they may put the player into expensive products because they get, you know, higher commissions.
Correct. Or yes.
Being able to ask some very simple questions, you know, how come, you know, not just performance related, or how much am I paying for this particular investment, or how much is that going to cost me? And by the way, gave me a referral to this insurance agent, for example, life insurance, you know, are you getting paid on this, right? In some very simple questions that kind of put the team on their toes and just say, okay, first of all, I need to do more to educate, and it just keeps them honest, right?
So can I ask then for you to tell our listeners, what type of questions should these families be asking? Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think certainly, as Max said, first of all, you do diligence. Like a financial advisor that has a number of complaints on his FINRA form, that's a red flag, right? And you can typically see, you know, this person was sued by a client for $250,000 or whatever. It's very, very detailed. So you certainly wanted a financial advisor who's got a clean record.
FINRA broker check.
Right, FINRA broker check. And sometimes there may be some instances where, you know, it
was unfounded, but if there's a track record there, then, you know,
and they've jumped firms three or four times, they have a record of customer complaints, red flag, right? So I would certainly ask, you want to ask about fees, right? So there's two different types of accounts. You can have an advisory account where you're basically charged a fee for the assets that the advisor manages, or you can have a brokerage account where you basically pay a commission. And you want to ask the question, you know, this approach versus the other approach, what are the benefits and what are the costs? You know, explain this to me. You can even go by line item. Okay, here are like three mutual funds. Like what is the cost? What is the trailer, like in the industry call it? Like what am I paying, you know, for this particular investment? If it's 2.5%, that's really high, right? So I think, you know, is this appropriate? How risky is this? Right. You know, can you show me the history of this particular investment, right? How is it done? How did it do in the last 5 years when the market was up 30% and this was up only, you know, 10? Why is that? Well, it's less risky, and we don't want something that's super volatile for you. We want something that can grow steadily over time, and we don't want to have an investment near portfolio that's going to go down 40% because it's only invested in, you know, in technology or in AI or in crypto.
And yeah, you can say, hey, you know, you see it all the time. Hey, my buddy, his portfolio is up 150% this year. What's he invested in? Oh, well, he's all in Bitcoin. Well, yeah, that's makes a lot of sense. It's an extremely volatile, you know, asset.
But it was also down 60% last year. So,
and look, that's not our objective here. We're looking at a long-term time horizon.
Right.
So you can hit your goals. It's not all about just picking the different stocks that are going to boom in certain years.
And then the other things, I think the questions you want to ask is this, you know, how accessible are you? Can we call you when we have a question? So like how often can you meet? We would like to have monthly calls and quarterly meetings, if that's what you want to do, right? Who are these? Some of the other clients that you're working with? You know, what's a typical account size for your clients? If you have somebody who's got 3,000 clients with, you know, $200,000 accounts, that may not be the right fit for somebody who just signed a $100 million contract, who wants to start a family foundation, who has, you know, philanthropy in his scope, who has different rental properties, who's making endorsements in different states, right? That's not the right fit, most likely. So you really want to, to your point, those are the, I guess, would be the pretenders. You know, they mean well, but they don't really have the tools to help you create this generational wealth, which, you know, and there's, you know, there's so many different experts that can help you do that.
Now, my son comes to you, okay, just signed, let's say, a $3 million contract. As a financial advisor, what would be the top four things you would tell them to do right away?
Should I? That's a good, really good question.
Well, I think
you want to, you'll give two, I'll give two.
Okay, well, so I think, first of all,
you know, then so I'm
right, so I'm
you know, if you only have a hammer, you know, in your toolbox, then everything you see is a nail, like we say, right? So I think what's really important is to have a really deep conversation with Terrence, for example, right? Or whoever the player is, and really get a good perspective on his situation, right? Do you have any outstanding debt, right? Do you have a mortgage? Is there somebody in your life that you need to help? Do you have, to support a sick parent,
right?
What are your interests, right? What are your charitable interests? You know, how do you want to create a legacy? I think you got to get it's what we call the human element, right? You have to understand what's really in his mind, what he wants to do with his life. Then you go back and say, okay, you've got, you know, you've got a mortgage in 2023 when mortgages were at 7%, right? They're now down at 4%. So first of all, I would maybe pay off that mortgage or refinance or pay off any debt that has a high interest. You want to figure out what his cash flow is, right? His cash needs are, what are his bills? You know, what, you know, how much does he pay for, like, simple things like the budgeting thing, right? And say, well, we got to make sure we have enough cash flow to cover your basic needs, right? And so what's the next basket, right? And then you can think about, okay, investments, right? So if I've now all the money that I need to pay my bills,
you covered your liquidity, right? That's the first
liquidity, the first basket, right? So then now you can say, now I've got some money left over,
right? How do I make that grow?
So how do I make that grow? And then you can talk about the different investments that you can do. It could be real estate. Some people want to build a real estate portfolio, right? Rental properties, et cetera. Or you can just say, well, you now want to start putting some money into an investment account and try not to touch that. The whole idea of compounding, meaning letting money grow year after year. You know, you put in 100,000, you make 8%. The 108,000 is going to...
Right.
So, you know, typically if you do like 8%, 7%, 8%. I mean, you can, you know, double your money and call it 8 years or so. But and then you can talk about, okay, now we've covered these two buckets, right? So the third bucket is legacy.
Yes.
And so in Terrence's case, for example, we know that he's created a foundation, right? And so how can we then use that foundation and leverage whatever money he has to make the biggest impact,
right?
For, you know, for the charitable endeavors that he wants to undertake. So there is never just one answer. You really have to, it's a customized
and with legacy approach. It's the charitable and generations, like we said, that come after you to make sure that they're taken care of and they're comfortable. One question though that
right?
One question that I really like to ask is, tell me where you see yourself in 20 to 30 years. Because that tells me right away what's important to you. A lot of people say, you know, I see myself after playing, you know, having a family and making sure that they're all comfortable. Not complicated, but important to know if, you know, you are supporting a number of people, that's obviously going to be different than someone who's been single their whole career and is looking to start a business, you know, maybe after, go back to school, whatever it may be. Generally, when we first meet with a client, we go through what we call the discovery process. So we have a number of questions that really allow us to get to know the individual, not just from a financial perspective, but like Hannah said, from a human perspective.
Values. What are your values?
What are your values? Right. And, you know, this is, we've talked about this before. We talked about it in Vegas. You know, you're, a lot of these athletes, this is, they're going to be the first in their families to make this type of wealth.
Right.
If you do it right, the generations to come are going to be born into this.
Right.
How can you make sure that the values you learned transfers to the next generation? They need to know how hard you worked and how the team, hard your family and the team around you worked to get you there in order to maintain it. If they don't understand it, then it's never going to last. I mean, we always, what's the example that we always talk about with
the Vanderbilts or the Jordan?
Carnegies and the Vanderbilts.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the Rockefellers.
Rockefellers. Yeah. One of the big billionaire families. One of them started a foundation very early and their family got very involved. They still have most of their money today. The others
have more than they had.
Yeah.
Rockefeller Foundation, Rockefeller University. I mean,
the others, there's, I think you can probably find a few descendants with a few million dollars here and there. But it's not generational wealth anymore. A really good example in the athlete and entertainer space, and this is more on the music industry side of things, but Otis Redding, right? Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely legendary musician. And he died when he was, you know, in his mid to late 20s, right? Tragically, but before he died, he had a number of kids. He invested in several other businesses. And he made sure his family, his wife and his kids from very young ages, were all involved in that. So they understood what it meant to earn that money. You know, this was back in the 60s, you know, he was making a good amount for each show he performed once he got big. But he knew that wasn't going to be enough to create generational wealth. He brought the next generation in very early. And some of the businesses and even the charitable organizations that they run today are still in practice and have grown exponentially because he made sure to teach them exactly what it meant to be able to build wealth.
Wow. You know, we could stay here all day and talk about this. This is
very important.
It really is.
Very important.
It really, really is. We're going to have to invite you guys back.
Yeah.
And spend more time with them.
We'll be back for sure.
Yes, yes, yes. And you never know what our future will bring. You know what I mean? Because it's people like you that help our kids stay wealthy.
Right.
And that's a big difference, right? They get wealthy on their own, but it's staying there in that position is what is important. And this is how, where you come in. So we really appreciate this topic. We look forward to spending time with you guys in the future.
Likewise.
Yes.
It's always a pleasure.
It's been fun so far already. So
yes. And we want to thank you both for coming. And thank you all for joining us again at Courtside Moms Media with Wendy and Dania. And we'll see you guys soon.
So join us next time for another episode of A Moment for Moms. And please don't forget to like and share our episodes and share with anyone you know who's raising professional athletes or any fans who would love to get more insight on how powerful these moms are raising such great athletes and such great people.